Mr. Despagne, you're real, too?
Yes. Some people didn't like Boddington, but I don't really know the reason why. He was a newspaper man, I believe, belonging to the Associated Press. I'm not too sure about that. And when I met him after the war, he was writing a book about the what happened to the four people who were on board the Felucca. But I don't think the book was ever published. And Boddington afterwards became security officer somewhere in the Midlands. And then I believe he died several years ago, and nobody ever heard from him since. But Boddington was led astray, really, by the people he met in France, in Cannes. He went there to approve the Cartes circuit, and he was enamored with Cartes and his plan, and I believe London was as well, but although I'm not a psychologist, I saw through Cartes very early on, and I wouldn't have anything to do with it. Because when we got there, and Boddington more or less got there in within a week or so, the Olive Bazin, who was in charge of that circuit down there, and who had told London that the cut circuit was available if we wanted to back it up, well, Bazin got arrested, and the mission of Boddington more or less fell through, as he got a bit, I wouldn't say frightened, but he obviously didn't know what to do. When Bazin was arrested, Boddington did nothing except try to keep the circuit together and gave it to me to hand over to whoever was going to take it over from me afterwards. So for about a week or a fortnight, I was supposed to be in charge of the circuit, of which I knew nothing. I didn't even know one agent from the other. And when Peter Churchill came, I just said to him, well, there it is. It's yours. And Peter Churchill then kept me there for a while, because Bazin already had a wireless operator called Julien. And I was really supernumerary. So although we worked together, we tried to split our schedule. I still had mine and he had his, but we worked it together. One night he did his own and one night I did mine.
I think we're jumping a little bit ahead here. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to this in a moment. Mm-hmm. But you were saying that some people didn't like Boddington. Mm-hmm. What do you think they had against him?
Well, I think he was too gullible. I think possibly, and this is hindsight, he was more or less like a most modern type of newspaper man. They went after something, they had a thought in their head, and they carried on thinking that what they were thinking was right. And, I presume Boddington, because he had a very good cover, he therefore didn't risk any arrest, except if he had papers or things on him. But otherwise, he was supposed to be an American newspaper man. And in those days in France, and they were traveling freely, certainly in that part of the world.
What did you personally feel about Boddington?
At that time, nothing. I mean, as I say, he was my boss, and I did what he asked me to do.
What was he like as a boss?
Well, he was all right. I met him maybe once every other day. We didn't live in the same place, so he was all right.
Now, just picking up this story of you actually going to France, mm-hmm. You said you landed at Gibraltar and picked up the Felucca.
Yes.
How long were you in Gibraltar waiting for the Felucca?
Well, the Felucca was there, but I presume I stayed two or three nights there. Not more than two, I should say, because one day we were invited to go to the Rock Hotel, and that's the only meal I remember having in Gibraltar, so it can only be 2 days at the most.
Who went aboard the Felucca?
Well, Boddington, Fraget, Yvonne Rudelin, and myself. And then, of course, they had the Polish crew.
And what was the voyage like across the Mediterranean?
Well, awful to start with. We left in a force 9 gale, and everybody, including the crew, were violently sick. The wardroom where we were supposed to sleep got flooded, so it couldn't be used by anyone for the rest of the voyage. And we slept under sail on the after deck.
Did you have any encounters with enemy shipping?
That's another story. We're supposed to have, but I can assure you we didn't. We did see a ship a long, long way on the horizon, but it never came anywhere near us. But we had an engine breakdown as we were passing the Balearic Islands. And so we drifted for several hours, getting nearer and nearer to, I believe, was Italian or German submarine base. And eventually the engine was repaired and they went on. By that time the weather had become much better. I mean, the sea was just like oil.
Who was it who supposed that you had encountered an enemy craft?
Or somebody wrote a book about it. I don't know who.
So another false story?
Another false story. No, it was really uneventful. I think we did see a life jacket or an oar floating on the water, but I mean, you do meet that anywhere in the world, wartime or peacetime. Now, the only thing which really is vivid in my memory is the fact that when we were more or less a mile or so from the coast, we could smell the flowers. Even out at sea, very strong smell of
the flowers from which you make perfume.
The perfume, yes.
How did you actually get ashore?
Well, I went overboard into a rubber dinghy, ripped my trousers from top to bottom, got ashore with one sailor and my luggage. We all went one at a time. When I got on the rock there, I was so giddy, having spent something like 3 weeks at sea, then I couldn't stand up upright. So I think I did fall into the water again. And that's it. We got ashore. We got through a sewer, which went underneath the road, and then up the steps to a house, and spent the night there.
You climbed through the sewer?
No, we walked through the sewer. Well, actually, it was a storm drain more than a sewer. You know, quite high. You didn't have to bend down to do it. We spent the night there with the people who were the reception committee. Next morning, somebody came to fetch me with a bicycle and went to the house where I was supposed to stay.
Whereabouts exactly was this place that you landed?
Well, it was near the... near the villa of the Aga Khan, on the Baie de la Fourmi.
Where is this bay?
It's in between, in Cannes, but going towards Antibes. It's practically halfway between the two. If you know the road there, is where now they built a big roundabout and up and down lanes, where... One road goes to Nice, and the other one goes to Jean Lépin, and it's more or less where was it the Duke of Windsor? Yes, either the Duke of Windsor or the Aga Khan Villa, which is a wide, very big wide block there, and the name of the villa was Villa de l'Aube. That's where I spent the night. And the Villa de l'Aube doesn't exist anymore. It's been pulled down to make way for the new road arrangement.
What did you make of the reception committee?
Well, I was tired, a bit giddy, and I didn't make very much of it. I don't even remember who was there, except I think there were two men and a girl, but I'm not very clear about it.
Were all four of you in this villa?
Well, according to somebody else, the girl didn't stay there, Yvonne Rudin. She didn't stay there. Or if she stayed there, she didn't stay in the same room we did. But I can't remember.
But the four of you from the Felucca were all in the villa?
I think we must have been, but I don't know.
Who was the person who came to collect you?
The chap came to collect me was Georges Audouard, who was a croupier at the casino in Cannes. He collected me the next morning and we went through the back country to his house. And from his house, then he brought me to the house where I was going to stay.
Where was this place?
Le Canet, which is on top of Cannes.
And how many of you were staying there? Just you and Boddington?
Just me. Boddington, I believe, went to stay at the Villa Isabelle, where the Baron Malval's house. Baron Malval is the name we knew him under, but that wasn't his name.
Do you know what his name was?
I did know, but I've forgotten.
So you settled down in this villa?
Yeah. Well, I settled down in a house at Le Canet with the Girard, André Girard, not to be confused with André Giraud, who was Carte. André Girard was also a croupier, but I believe he was retired by that time. He was a croupier somewhere else, not in Cannes. And I stayed there for several months, I should say.
Doing well.
Going to work at the Villa Isabelle with Massette, mostly at night. And spending the rest of the day either on the beach or at the home.
So you would transmit every night, would you?
I went there every night, but I didn't transmit every night. I don't think we transmitted more than twice or three times a week. And I had very little to transmit because Boddington wasn't doing any job.
Wasn't it dangerous transmitting from the same place all the time?
Well, it was, but don't forget that it was still the unoccupied zone of France. I mean, that was in late 42. I mean, the German army came in November 42, and I wasn't there anymore then.
What did you think of the people with whom, the French people with whom you were working?
The French people with whom I was living, they were very good indeed. But I wasn't working with any French people. It wasn't my job. So I didn't meet any French people as such. I only met the people I knew, like the Girard and the Audouard and the Casal. Because Julien lived at the Casal, which is about 2 miles away from where I lived, and we both of us went down to Villa Isabelle, which is near La Boca, which is another suburb of Cannes, a long way, like if you were coming from, I don't know, Harrow, and go down to Kensington. That was about the distance. No, not so much so, but I mean, in the geographically speaking.
Did Boddington discuss with you the problems he was having?
Well, we talked together because at one time he had some paper buried in the garden and they disappeared. And so he was a bit peeved about it. I don't know what the papers were. I believe there was also some money being buried there. Discussed in the gardener was... Others stole the thing or gave the clue to somebody else to come and stole it. But what we talked about, I don't really know. Because I hardly met him when I was there. I mean, his message, he used to give his message to Julien, and we used to divide it amongst ourselves to transmit.
What did you think about the security?
Well, the security, as far as I was concerned, with the Edouard and the Girard was very good, because, well, we'd never met anybody else, and whoever came to the house, I mean, I was introduced like a long-lost cousin who came in for some reason. But the security of card system, that was so awful, and that's why I left. He had everything in writing in pieces of paper, all in clear, and he carried most of it with him, and the other lot was somewhere in his house in Antibes. And we used to meet, about once a day, somewhere in Cannes, Rue du Sergent Bobillou, I think it was, to discuss what happened, I mean, what they wanted to do and what their policy was. And I didn't like that, because all the bicycles were outside the house in a street which was not very, not much traffic there. And I thought it was very silly.
Did you raise this with them?
No, because I was the infant there. I was I was only a lieutenant. I couldn't argue with Carter, who was supposed to be a colonel. But I don't think Boddington ever went there. No, I don't think he did. Or if he did, I don't remember seeing him there.
Why did he not go there?
Well, he was busy trying to sort out, I presume, what to do with the olive circuit. And the fact that he had lost all his papers and what have you. Also, I presume, trying to get Olive out of prison. But that's another thing. You said the Olive, the local organization, tried to get him off the train in between Cannes and Marseille when he was taken somewhere else in France by the police, the Vichy police. And well, that's also a conflicting story there, and mine may be conflicting with the others because I wasn't there, and I don't know. But apparently he had the opportunity of escaping before getting to Marseille, and he wouldn't, or couldn't, I don't know.
Did Boddington discover what had happened to his papers?
No, we never knew whether it was the gardener who took them or whether it was somebody else.
So, you said that you were unhappy with these security arrangements, with the bicycles and so on.
Yes.
What did you decide to do and when?
Well, I decided not to have anything to do with them, except the fact of transmitting from the Villa Isabel. And then after a while, Raoul, Peter Churchill, decided I was supernumerary in Cannes, and he sent me to Marseille without telling me what I had to do or where I had to go or what. He just got rid of me. And then when Rabinovich, his own wireless operator, came there, he did the same thing to Julien. He sent Julien to Toulon, which is the worst place you could send anyone, because Julien's French was good, but it wasn't all that good. And Julien, one day when I was in Arles, came to see me, and he said, "What do I do? I've been promised a submarine or a felucca to get me away, but nobody wants to do anything about it." And I say, "Well, Julien, they want to get you killed. That's all they want to do." And eventually, Julien made his own... I think a submarine must have come and collected him from Toulon.
You were sure that they wanted to get him killed?
Well, they wanted to get rid of him. Kill or disappear or what, I don't know. But obviously he was wasting his time. He had no work to do, no instruction of what to do. He was just living there, hoping that something would happen.
How often did you come into contact with Raoul, with Peter Churchill?
on twice. Once when I handed over to him, that is to say, here you are, it's yours. I don't know what it's all about, but it's yours. Because Boddington by that time had disappeared somewhere else. And the second time when my set was not working anymore, and I went to see Peter, because he was the only chap I knew, to ask him for some money, a new set, and if not, ways and means of going back to England. He wasn't there when I went there. Odette was there, and I spoke to Odette, and eventually Peter came in, and he offered me half a litre of olive oil, which I promptly gave to friends of ours, and that was that. And then from then onwards, I tried to make my own way out of France.
What did he give you the olive oil for?
Ah, because I insisted on getting some money. Excuse me. He said he couldn't give me any. He didn't know me. Who was I? And it's Odette to say, well, give him something. So he gave me a half a litre of olive oil, which, mind you, in those days was useful, but not useful to get away from France.
How much could you have got for the olive oil?
Oh, that, no idea. But I mean, as I was fed by other people, I mean, I gave it to the people who fed me.
What did you think of the work Peter Churchill was doing there?
Well, at the time I didn't think anything, because I didn't know what he was up to. Afterwards, I mean, it's only what I read or what people told me. So I don't know. I don't think he never did anything. There's a controversy as to whether he was supposed to do things, and then that was countermanded by London. But I know my instruction when Boddington was still there was that we had to cut the railway line between Italy and France in case of the Italian walking into France. But that he never did. But apparently he was told not to, so I don't know. I think his role was much more political, because he was very much involved with Cart, and Cart wanted to, or at least he said, he knew Vichy officers, and he could more or less organize the whole of the resistance in France. And when the day came, he would have the Vichy army or officers on his side. But of course, that was pipe dreams. And Peter Churchill was more or less involved in keeping that legend alive. His security was nil, because the way he was caught in the Savoy. I mean, it's obvious.
Was that the only meeting you had with Odette?
Yes. Well, that's better not be recorded. I met her once when she arrived at Baron de Malval's place. Then the next time was several months later, when I went back to Cannes to get some money. That's the only time I met her.
And what circumstances did you meet her at the Baron's place?
Well, she was there at the time. But as I say, that's another story. I better not talk about it. Otherwise somebody will censor this.
You said that Peter Churchill sent you to Marseille?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, there was a Jew boy who lived at the bottom of the road near Julien, who was living, and apparently the police was looking for Jews at the time, and he and I went to Marseille. Peter Churchill said, you go to Marseille, and you take whoever his name was with you.
Take
who? The Jew chap. And we got to Marseille, and going down the Saint-Charles station, you know, there's steps there all the way down from the top of the station down to the street. I was tapped on the back by somebody, turned round, and this chap in uniform with dark glasses, and he said to me in French, qu'est-ce que tu fais là, mon cochon? What are you doing there, my little pig? I turned around, and I certainly didn't realize who it was. And it turned out to be an old school friend of mine, who was still in the Vichy Armistice Army, Air Force, and he said, "But I met your mother a fortnight ago, and you're supposed to be in England. What are you doing here?" By that time, the Jew ran away, and I never saw him again. And my friend said to me, "Well, if you don't do anything contrary to against France, I'll give you 48 hours to get away." And I say, "Well, give me 2 hours and that'll be enough." And then we met once more in Marseille, where I had him, the meeting was observed by a friend of ours. And we met there, but I thought it was no good to him or to me, so we never met again.
What is this little pig expression? Is it a common
expression, it's a friendly expression.
Can you tell me in detail what you did? After
in Marseille?
Yes.
Nothing. I starved. I had no instruction. My wireless set started packing up, so I never could get anything out. Otherwise, I would ask London for help. I had my normal meal tickets, which were valid for a month. But as I used to have, I had no breakfast because there's nothing to eat for breakfast anyway. And I had one lunch, the first course and the second course in one restaurant, and the second course and the dessert in another one. So after 10 days, I had no more tickets. Interdiction to go on the black market, because I had the money. I could have gone to the black market, but I was told not to, so I didn't. Excuse me. So for 20 days of the month, I had nothing to eat.
How did you survive?
Well, I lost about 2 stones. And one day, I discover a packet of dates on the mantelpiece where I was, and I resisted the temptation for quite a number of days, and one day I was starving. So I opened the packet and I ate it all, worms included.
Were you sick?
No. No. And I passed and stayed in Marseille about 6 weeks altogether. I think the second month, when I ran out of meal tickets after 10 days, I just gave it up. And I went to Arles, where I met my wife, or at least I met her sister first.
And how did you meet her sister?
Well, to show you how good the security was in France, the sister came in because through a friend of ours, they got my wireless set. Two friends, Méjean and Robert Boyer, carried my wireless set past the control of the station from Marseille to Arles. And they got me into a hotel there. And they introduced me to my brother-in-law, who became my brother-in-law, who I met his wife, which was my wife's sister. And I used to do my transmission either from them or from somewhere else. I mean, I had several houses in Arles. The hotel threw me out after 3 days. They said they couldn't have a British officer staying there. It was too compromising. So I left and I went to live in a flat. Near the theatre.